Hello.
I am loving Cornell Butler for bringing us into this. Is this Kevin?
It is Kevin. Today is the Kevin and Michelle show, or the Michelle and Kevin show, and fake Andy and Amanda show.
That's it. That's what we are tonight. That's what we are, Andy and Amanda.
That's right.
How you doing?
And I've got
tonight,
a little
Kevin?
Bit. I got a little bit of a British accent, so we might be able to, that makes up for the loss of Amanda's. I'm doing good. How about you?
I'm great. I can't do accents at all. The only accent I have is my South Philly Italian accent. So
that's okay.
I can bring that to the
one.
Table.
It's a good one.
I think so. I think it's fun. I wanted to start out by thanking Andy and Amanda for bringing us to this show. And I don't know if you knew this or not, but last year when we did this show, right around this time, I believe it was, that was the first time I ever did a radio show. I've done talk
really?
Shows in the past. Yes, but that was the first time that I ever did a radio show. And
I wouldn't have known that. You did a great job.
Thank you. I appreciate it. It was with you. And
you were
with my first show, and now this is the second. I believe I did the Andy and Amanda show a couple of more times, and now this is the first time that I was asked to host, and it's with you, who I was on the show
cool.
first with.
That's cool because we already kind of know each other, so that's a good thing.
Exactly. I thought it was kind of amazing. Kevin Michaels, country music star, and I was thrilled to be on that show with you.
Thank you.
You're
so
welcome.
Much.
You're welcome. So I'm going to before I get into what I want to get into, I'm going to throw something out to you. So I'm curious. My dad was in the music business. Pretty much what I'm going to get into. In a bit.
Yeah, he was a big teen idol back in the day, wasn't he?
He was a teen idol, yes. And back in the day, we're talking like 50s and 60s. My question to you is, since how has the music business, and I know there's a lot of answers to this question, but how did the music business change? The process, the distribution, the necessity or not to tour? What are your thoughts on that?
Well, it is definitely a multiple answer question. But let me say this. I mean, as I think you may have heard the first time we were on here together, was in a band back in the day. Maybe not quite so far back as your dad was, but I think the business was similar. And I had kind of sworn off the music business, period.
Really?
For the better part of 41 years, actually. And so to me, coming into it, I felt like a stranger in a strange land. And it's completely different.
Wow.
And I'm not sure that, to be honest, I'm not sure that I think in a good way. But it is what it is, and I'm fortunate that the record that I put out down home in Georgia went to number one on the country charts.
I know,
which is
crazy because
I couldn't even promote it.
You couldn't. In other words, you didn't tour with that.
Well, no, I wanted to. I was scheduled to promote the record, and then I had a health issue that prevented me from, from moving around too much. But I couldn't go above 1,000 feet above sea level, so I couldn't even cross Los Angeles to the valley, let alone get in a plane and promote the record.
Wow, I did not know that.
Yeah, that's kind of kept that dark. But it's oddly enough, who certainly didn't expect it, but the record still managed to spend 4 months in the top 10 bypassing people like, you know, Garth Brooks and Keith Urban and
That's
Kenny Chesney and Blake Shelton and all those people, which shocked me. I mean, I was...
You were actually able to do that without going out on tour. That's amazing. That's amazing.
Absolutely.
To me.
Absolutely. And the last time that we were on the radio together, or the first time you were on, I was still at somebody else's house recovering from the surgery that I had to have that, you know, caused that whole debacle where I couldn't go out. So, I was actually in recovery at that point. So it's interesting. I mean, thankfully I'm doing much better now. I don't know, you know, cause it's a while back. If you can remember that I talked.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say, I talked slower the last time than I am now because, I had a problem that affected my speech. Yeah.
Oh, wow. Okay, we'll have to pin that as a side note, as I have a throat issue. Mm-hmm. Okay. We'll talk separately about that.
Scary
okay.
Stuff. Scary stuff, and it happened about 3 weeks before we left Nashville to make the record. And while I was having a hard time with my speech, it somehow didn't affect my singing. Apparently, two different parts of the brain.
It's two different parts of the brain because I do believe that. I say that my throat issues stemmed from my speaking voice and not my singing voice. When I sang, it didn't hurt. When I spoke a lot, I was in pain.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can. Yeah. It's definitely something to that because. Do you remember the country singer Mel Tillis?
I'm sorry. I should be so much better with names, and I'm not.
He was like a superstar back in the day. He was one of the big guys. But Mel Tillis had a stutter, like really bad. He could hardly, I mean, when he talked, it was horrible.
Okay.
But he could sing beautifully, and it, no problem. And
Amazing.
Yeah,
so that really is... It's different part of the brain. Wow.
Yep.
Does that explain why when people sing you don't hear accents?
I think that's probably right. I mean, that's an interesting question. I have a little bit of one. It's not as much as it used to be, especially since I had to kind of relearn to talk again. I sounded, you know, before all that, I sounded more Englishy. Even though I was born in America and everything, I had lived over there for a long time, so I had a, you know, affectation of an accent. And occasionally, I think you can still hear it a little bit, but it's not what it was.
You acquire the accent from being around it so much, right? From hearing people speak that way around you.
But you don't even realize you have it, you know? I mean... But one thing is that, you know, and I think I did a couple of impersonations or something when we were on the show last time together. So I do that anyways, and I've been doing it as a kid. So I think I'm kind of geared to pick up sounds and recreate them anyway.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Did you ever act?
I did. I've actually made a few things.
There you go.
Mostly playing bad guy Italian people who run the mafia.
my dad would love that.
Yeah.
All right, I usually
play a guy named Sonny. I did Mickey Rooney's last movie. I played a mafia type character named Sonny. And,
okay.
It's a comedy, but that was the first time that I took it, you know, on film to comedy, although I was well-versed in comedy improv. And took it for a long time with Harvey Lembeck, and later with Denny Evans, who was his prize pupil after Harvey passed. So, yeah, it seems like I'm always the if you can't afford De Niro, you get Kevin. You know? I mean, that's that's kind of what it seems like.
You answered a question that I had when I saw the poster for tonight's show, and it said comics, you know, and I had no idea, and I was like, okay, you know, it means something, and whatever it means, it doesn't matter because I have other things that I need to do here, you know, to prepare for the show or whatever. So I didn't ask about it. But that's where they got that from, because you were a comic. I just did a comedy improv class.
Did you?
I did at my acting school, the Actors Co-op in Swarthmore.
I love comedy improv. I think if you can do comedy improv, drama is a cakewalk.
The class that we did was a comedy class where we learned how to do stand-up comedy. I did take a comedy improv class years ago. This particular class, we actually learned to write. And we wrote, it was with Sean Conway, the Actors Co-op in Swarthmore. And we learned to write, and at the end of it, we all got to perform. We did two or three different shows, sold out shows to, you know, like 150 people. Like, and if you could do stand up, you can do anything, because
stand up, I've never tried, to be honest with
you. Oh, you have to try it. You have to.
I don't know. I'd be scared out of my mind.
If you could act, dancing, acting, singing, whatever it is, after doing that class, like I always feared it, but after doing that class, I could honestly sit here and say that the hardest thing to do is stand-up comedy. And if you could do that.
Oh, no doubt. I mean, that's horrifying to me.
If you could do it and get over the fear, it actually can be fun.
Well, I believe that. I mean, we had, to me, one of the greatest stand-up comics ever in our improv class when I started taking lessons, and he would come and go later on, Robin Williams, and also John Ritter.
You took class with Robin Williams?
Yeah, funny guy.
No, you didn't. Wow.
Well, I didn't. Yeah, with the comedy improv, Harvey Lembeck.
Amazing.
Was Robin and John Ritter's coach, yeah.
Oh, wow, yeah. Drop the mic right there. Wow.
Well, yeah, it was just kind of cool to be. He actually helped me with a lot of stuff the first few times that I did it.
That's another whole show right there. Just tell us one thing. If there was one thing that you would want to tell the audience of something that he helped you with or something that you took from that class, what would that one thing be?
Well, we were doing a show, and I had never done a comedy improv show, and I was very unsure of myself with comedy improv to start with. Although, you know, part of Harvey's thing was don't try to be funny, don't go for the joke. We weren't allowed to cuss because that made it easier to get a laugh.
Right.
There was a lot, you know, that's frightening, you know. So I was on stage and he put me up with this woman who just took the whole scene and just kept talking and never gave me a chance to do anything. And, you know, Robin had been in some of the classes and saw me play this, you know, Italian mobster guy that was, you know, and he came and, because in between, I was so upset, I was like going to leave. I was kind of like, oh, I can't, you know, I don't even want to get up again. It was like horrible. And I didn't get to do anything. And he said, well, the scene was kind of funny anyway, but, here's the thing, you know, like you can be really loud and stuff when you play that character that they called the guy, which was just basically like an East Coast Italian guy that was like, you know, could be kind of loud. Anyway,
very cool.
Said,
the guy,
just
I like
just
that.
Go, and if she starts, you know, if he puts you up with someone who does that again, just over talk or whatever. So of all things, Harvey, which very seldom did this, he put me up with the same woman for the second sketch that I had to do.
Wow.
And she started right in doing what she did the first time, and I just yelled at the top of my lungs with a heavy New York vibe, "Shut up!" And the whole audience cut up laughing. And then I was
oh,
like...
Oh, my God. Because like, the audience is probably sitting there thinking the same thing. Like, would you please just give this guy a chance to say, like, a couple of lines, right?
Yeah, well, they thought the whole thing was planned and that we did the first thing on purpose to set up for the second thing, which got
Amazing. Probably
one of the biggest laughs of the whole show. And I can think of one other thing that we were doing a show another time, and there was a Russian girl that had come to the class, and she was in the, she would deny people, which, you know, that's a no-no in improv. And I came to the door and I found some flowers backstage. So I came like I was going to do a date. Nobody knew what we were going to do, but I came to the door, I knocked on the door, and she answered, and I said, "I'm ready for the date." And she said, "Well, I'm not." And I was kind of like, for a split second, I stopped, and then I remembered Robin saying, you know, just if they do that, just like sell them out. So I just kind of like, oh, okay. And I shut the door and left, and she was standing in the middle of the stage, and she didn't know what the hell to do.
That is so cool.
And so she started getting neurotic, and the audience is cracking up again, thinking we planned it that way. And it was just advice I got from him as to what to do if you get in those situations.
Amazing. Amazing.
Oddly enough, I ended up really good friends with the woman that wouldn't shut up at the first.
Look at that.
She never did those to me again. So
she never did that to you again?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Do you think it could have been like maybe nervousness on her part, or
I don't know. She was pretty polished. I mean, she'd been doing it for a long time.
Okay.
And I don't know if what it was, but she ended up thinking I was hysterically funny and really close friends with me. Her daughter later came to the class, and she loved when we could do scenes together and I could do scenes with her daughter. So, it ended up like a great friendship. I talked to her a couple days ago, actually.
Amazing. So improv, you're supposed to, like you said, you're not supposed to shut people out. So you're supposed to go back and forth and feed off of each other. So when you came, and I'm just reviewing this for the audience, So when you came to the door and said that you're ready for the date, and she said, "Well, I'm not," she wasn't feeding you. She wasn't giving you anything to work with. She was shutting you down. So basically the answer to that is shut her down and get out.
Exactly. And actually it's weird because while the other lady and I became really good friends, I never saw that woman again after that. She quit the class.
Wow, I
feel bad if I humiliated her, but I would have been humiliated if I didn't do it, as you know, the teacher and Robin and a lot of other people pointed out. And
that's a great story. Great story.
Yeah.
And the fact that it stems from Robin Williams. I mean, like like I said, that's drop the mic right there.
And I went to RADA when I was younger. For Shakespeare and stuff, and he was a Shakespearean actor, what's the great school in New York? Juilliard.
Juilliard. Oh, wow.
Hey, let's do this. So, Kev, how you doing anyway?
I'm doing good. I mean, we had a little glitch there, but, it's all right. I mean, it is what it is, and... onward and upward. So we were talking about Robin Williams, and that was kind of fun because he was in my improv class. And did you lose Mikhail, or what's happening?
It is molecularly impossible.
Anyways, just one quick Robin story again, because he was such a funny guy. I remember we had a room like we would go to like on the break. It was a 2-hour class, and we'd have like a 15-minute break, and we had snacks and stuff like that, and they had a TV on. And I remember one thing that always stuck in my mind was how fast he is, too. So they had MTV when they were still playing music stuff, and Keith Richards was doing an anti-drug commercial, of all people, and he's like,
oh my God.
Yeah, so he was like, you know, kids, don't take drugs. And Robin said, we can't, Keith. You did them all.
No, no.
Very,
oh, my God.
Yeah.
Was that on air?
Hmm?
Was that on air? Like it was taped and it was on air?
Ew, yeah, it was a real, oh, no, Robin just said it in the room. No.
Okay. Oh, my God.
But like everybody was eating snacks and just like, cracked up laughing, you know. It's like he was so fast. I mean, he was such a I don't know anybody that quick as Robin Williams was. I love Sebastian Maniscalco. He's my favorite current comedian, but still, he doesn't have the speed of Robin.
I love him too. Yeah, he's a comedian that I love to sit down and watch. Robin Williams, he's just in a different stratosphere, you know.
Yeah, he was like almost not human. He's so good at it. I mean,
I can't even imagine being taught by him.
He wasn't a teacher, but he helped everybody in the class, and that was cool.
It's priceless. It just to be around that is absolutely priceless.
Yeah, Ritter was amazing. John was an amazing guy, and you know, so kind to my mom. My mom came to every class too, and that was fun. You know, the teachers really allowed that, which, you know, they generally didn't allow people to come in except for once to monitor. But my mom became like the class mom, and she was just there at every class.
That's sweet. That's
yeah.
Sweet. John Ritter.
Yeah.
Who did he pattern himself after with all of these stunts? Jerry Lewis. Mm-hmm. Am I saying the right name?
Jerry. I mean, he might have. I think
right,
that,
like,
that he was. He was certainly into a little bit of Jerry Lewis. I know that the second teacher after Harvey died, Denny was like did a great impression of Jerry Lewis, and he was the second teacher. But John was just like such a sweet man, and what a powerful actor when he played serious roles too. I mean, he was just amazing. Of course, Robin was too, you know.
Exactly. Yes.
But you know, we strayed somehow. We strayed to acting and stuff when you asked a question originally about music, and we were talking about how music was, you know, back in the day when your dad was doing it and how it is now. And
it's right. I had asked you the question about things that were different, the process of distribution. I'm sorry?
I said I find it weird now. You know, this whole online thing where you can't reach anybody by phone anymore. Or you just have to submit your music, and you know, there's a half a dozen or a dozen different online distributors that, you know, really don't. I don't think get you anywhere. And then there's like a few that are related to the big companies like Sony Music and Universal, and
right.
They suddenly, like in within like a couple of weeks of each other, both the Universal owned, you know, owned online site and the Sony Music one, one of the Sony Music ones, suddenly made it where you had to submit and then. But I don't think there's anybody there because of COVID still, and you can't get in touch with anybody. You call up even Sony Music's number, the main number, and it's like, well, we'll direct you to if you have somebody's direct number, we'll direct you there. It's otherwise nothing.
So it seems
you can't
like
talk to anybody.
Like with the the self-tape auditions. Kind of like the same feeling. It might be out of your way to have to drive to the audition and whatnot, but mm-hmm. it just seems so impersonal. And the self-tape, we're not videographers. The self-tape,
right.
compared to what we would look like if they were putting us on tape, is going to be very different. I keep saying I would love to have a conversation with my dad now. And, you know, the differences between the way it was then and the way it is now. There's so many differences. And, I guess people are like, oh, it's easier because you just do this or you just do that and you stay at home and you just submit. It's not, because before, I had told you with one of our phone calls or one of our texts, that a song that my dad and he wrote, and we produced it, and I shot it in Nashville, and mm-hmm. I was actually able to walk around, it's miles and miles of a stretch of where, right, where all those record label companies are. But I was literally able to walk around with the song on pencil and paper and on a cassette tape. And I was able to walk around and walk into every single one of those music companies and say, hey, you know, here's a song my dad and I wrote. And, you know, hopefully you'll get back to us, right? Can't do that now.
I don't know if you can, and I don't think so. But, I mean, did you have appointments with them, or did you just walk in?
No. I literally walked in off the street. My girlfriend lives in Nashville.
All the people?
And I got in, and I was able to speak to whoever was at the desk. And they took my envelope and they took my tape, and most of them just said, you know, thank you, we'll get back to you, whatever. But one of them, as I was walking out of the studio, actually threw the tape in and started listening to it. And I was in my head, I'm saying to myself, oh my God, like they're listening to our song. And I just walked out. I was forward enough to go in there, but then I was like, okay, do I really want to be a pest and like just be like, hey, so what did you think, you know? Turns out, the end of that story is, turns out that that company actually sent me a contract and wanted to sign me and produce that song. Okay. I'm sure it was geared around like, I'm sorry?
Was it one of the majors or?
I don't remember. It wasn't Sony or, you know, like one of like Universal. It wasn't that, but it was a big building like on that strip. So you know, with people there. So so we wound up not doing it because the contract, they wanted 50%. And my dad said, no way. My dad was in the business like forever, and I was just like dabbling at the time, and I was just like, okay, you know,
I would love that right now, 50%.
Well, that's
as much
what
as that sounds like
I,
crappy.
Yes.
It's like now here's what, if it's only 50% of record sales, that's a great deal. Because nowadays they have what they call a 360 deal. And the 360 deal is, first of all, they don't give you a huge advance like they used to. Now the most you can get is probably $250,000, which is considered a big advance now. It wasn't in the day. And, you know, but $250,000 back then would have been a lot of money too. So, so they give you that. You have to pay it back, but now they get 85% of record sales. You only get 15.
That's now?
They take, this is what they want in most cases now. They take half of your publishing. half of your merchandising and 25% of your concerts. It's like, I know that for me, the reason I want to speak to someone is because I have a history in the business, and I'm not just someone brand new off the street.
Right.
And I'm down for 50%. If they want 50%, if they give me a bunch of money up front and they want 50% of record sale, they can have it.
Right.
I don't want to necessarily give up publishing because I have my own publishing company.
That's what it was, and that's what I remember that he was upset about.
Publishing?
Because they wanted half of the rights for the publishing. Yeah, for the writing,
the lyrics,
the music, right?
Yep.
Yeah, so
Merchandising, unless they pay for the merchandising, they shouldn't get anything. And unless they like do all the work on the concerts and lay out money for tickets and whatever, all the promotional stuff and everything, they shouldn't get anything out of the artist for a concert. That's just kind of not fair.
Okay. I don't know how it was and how it is now. But 85% sounds, that just sounds insane to me, no matter what business we're discussing, correct?
Yeah.
Am I wrong?
I think it's insane. I won't do it. But that's why I wanted to go through this company called The Orchard. And The Orchard is owned by Sony Music.
Okay.
And they allow you to keep your label if you have your own label. But you used to be able to submit to them, and they would decide whether they wanted you or not, as opposed to like DistroKid or TuneCore or whatever, where anybody can send it in.
Okay.
But if they accepted you, you could also get upgraded to Sony Music. But if you did get upgraded to Sony Music, and they were only taking 15% and giving you 85%. However, if they gave you a big advance and upgraded you to Sony, to Sony Music, then they would take between 35% and 50% of record sales only, and that's not a bad deal.
Okay. That sounds more reasonable.
Yeah, I mean, because they've given you a bunch of money to do it, and you still have to pay it back. But they still get 50% of that. And but publishing, a lot of people do take 50. Most record companies take 50% of publishing. That's what happened to the Beatles. And we see where that all ended up. Michael Jackson ended up owning all their music for a long time.
Right.
He bought it from some other company.
I heard about that. So there, Michael Jackson was actually able to purchase.
Yep.
Their music.
He purchased the Beatles, and the thing is that Paul McCartney made a record with Michael Jackson, and Michael asked him for advice on, because he was the richest guy in the music business, and Paul said, get into publishing, because he owned all Buddy Holly stuff and everything. And he said, if you get into publishing, then, you can make a bunch of money off of that. And Paul always says it like a joke. He says, Michael says, I'm going to buy yours, And he said he laughed, and then he did. And then he wouldn't give him a raise or anything like that, so they ended up not friends anymore. But
I did not know that story.
Yeah, it got ugly. So Paul has actually been, since, Michael died and whatnot, he's been buying back a lot of the Beatles' music.
That's a really interesting history of story about the history of music.
Yeah. And even guys who were supposed to be friends, I mean, Michael's had a pretty dead career until Paul McCartney did those couple of tunes with him, and then he got back with Thriller and all that stuff and became a big deal again.
Right.
So the backstab was kind of like not cool, and Paul, you know, he was not very happy with it. So they ended up no longer friends, and it's, you know, it's sad that, like, you know, that kind of thing happens between friends. And I'm kind of going through some stuff like that with the guy who produced the stuff in Nashville with me.
Okay. I mean, I could see why everybody today is so interested in having things written out. Yeah, especially when you're dealing with friends, and it's probably better to do things like that ahead of time.
Absolutely.
Right, so there's no hard feelings. This is just business, and we're going to write everything down just in case, and just so that everybody's on the same page.
Absolutely must. You must do that. We did not. Because we were looking at it as, oh, this is like one of my best friends. He's never going to do anything bad to me, you know, or the people that I introduced him to, who, you know, not rich people who financed this record, who are like family to me, though. And in the end, he kind of screwed them over as well, or tried to. But, you know, fortunately, there are three of us and one of him, and we know what he said and what he agreed to originally. And there's no contract. So, you know, I think the three of us who know that he agreed to, which standard is like 3% or 3 to 5% of the sale of the record, period. That's it for a producer, unless you pay them outright.
Okay.
And he ended up wanting 50% for producing it, which I'm not getting 50%. So why should he? You know, that's
right. Exactly. Yeah. I agree. Yes.
Yeah.
I totally agree there.
Yeah. So that friendship is over. But it's sad. You know, it's really sad that friends can do that to other friends, and that, you know, just that businesses, you know, show business, there's so much dirty dealing in the movie business and
TV business, and
record business.
Yeah. That's where I you know, what I hear. My dad always, you know, his, and we'll hear it because I want
to
play his song. He's very
up.
Yeah. I'm going to put that on in a second.
I've heard a couple of them. He was great.
Which ones did you listen to?
I think, is it Heartbreaker?
Yes. Yes, that's the one.
Mona?
And Mona. Those are the two that hit the Billboard chart.
Yeah, I like those really a lot.
And I think it's Heartbreaker that was actually in the top 20, but I don't want to, like, confirm that because I'm not 100% sure of that. But I know it was up very
big TV series. There was just right recently on Netflix a hit TV series called Heartbreaker. It's a pity you couldn't have sold him the song.
That title, even for other songs, there's like so many other artists that have made songs called Heartbreaker. I would absolutely love. I'm gonna play it. Let me stop saying I'm going to do it and actually do it. So now, basically, what I'm doing is a friend of mine, Bob Charger. He's a radio and television personality, 53 years in the business. I was talking to him before the show, and he was friends with my dad, and he actually sent me the links. The YouTube links for his song.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that's right.
I was ready to play them on my CD player.
Oh wow.
Yeah, because I have a CD. I have them on a CD and a CD player. I was ready to play it on that, and Bob just sent me the links, and I was like, oh, cool. Like, this is great.
Very cool.
So yeah.
Is he current? Is he currently a radio personality? Is Bob currently a radio personality?
He still is. Radio, television, he's a SAG actor, 53 years in the business, so he's up there. He's probably, like, you know, around my dad's age. They met, I believe he told me, in, I think 1963 they met.
Wow.
It might be a little bit after that. The song came out in 62. So it might have been a few years after that they actually met.
I was
born four or five years after this song came out. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to play it on my cell phone, and I'm just going to have the phone that we're attached to each other on, just like next to it. And and hopefully that'll give a good reading. So let me.
I just have to
hit on mute, and here we go. The other, but the reason why I chose that one over Mona, hopefully we'll do another show together and we could play Mona. But
that's great.
We were talking about you know, the negativity with the music business, and my dad had that, you know, by the time I was around and was an adult. Like, he was very negative towards it. I can't think of a word I want to say, but
I think that's the case with most people who are, you know, who have been in it for a long time. I mean, unless you're like Harry Styles, who probably got screwed early on and, just made a deal with Sony Music where they gave him $50 million or $80 million. Just to re-sign with them, and you don't have to pay it back.
When he was so positive. I mean, he has other songs that aren't positive, but with this one, it's like after he died, and I listened to this song again after not listening to it for many years, I just said to myself, oh my God, my dad was positive. My dad liked to dance. My dad liked to get people up and dance and make them have fun, you know? Do you get to a point? How do you get to a point? How do you go from that to, you know, being so negative, like, you know, no way, no, they want 50%, like, no, you know, show them the back of your jacket, you know.
Yeah.
How do you get there, you know? And me, at 30-something years old, at the time, I was young, 30s. You know, at me at that time, I was just like, oh, I don't understand, like, why are you being so negative, you know?
Yeah.
But I could, you know, after hearing your stories and a lot of other people's stories, I could see now where, you know, if you're chipping away at something for, like, you know, 20 years, I could see where you could land there. Most definitely.
On the other side of it, though, it's like you have to think like, well, you don't have to think that way, obviously, but but on the other side of it, I think 50% of something is better than 100% of nothing. So,
well, that's what I had thought. You know, me being the positive person that I still was at 30 years old, I remember sitting in the parlor of, you know, my mom and dad's home and just being like, wow, 50%. Like, 50% is better than 0%. Like, I want to do this, you know, but... you know, like I said, you know, he had a lot more experience than me. So, you know, but and things change, and the reason, you know, I definitely want to have another conversation with you about all the things that changed in the business, because, like, just something as simple as streaming. I did a class in Cape May, New Jersey. They had a music festival, and
okay.
I did classes. You went to classes during the day, and they had the festival at night. So
okay.
I really loved the classes, like sitting and taking all the notes and everything. And there was one class where it was just like a whole hour and a half of them just discussing streaming. And it was at that point, and this was about, I want to say, maybe about 5 years ago, 7 years ago. It was at that point that I just sat and I said to myself, like, wow, I have lyrics and I could find musicians, but, you know, when it comes to what you need to do for the distribution of music nowadays, like, I have no clue.
Yeah, it's a whole different ballgame. It's you can put things out. You know, through these companies like TuneCore and DistroKid and stuff like that. But, you know, I'm not sure, like, how some of the rappers are able to do it and get big things happening. You know, this guy Drake just got one of the, like, the biggest deal ever. Some Canadian guy that's a rapper, and he apparently did so well on promoting his stuff himself that he got a deal from, I think it's Sony Music, who said that they signed him because if they didn't, he would almost control most of the record business, which it would have been
insane.
Like the end of it.
That's
yeah.
insane. Well, but
I wish I knew his secret.
This is how popular he is, because I told you at the beginning of our conversation, I'm not good with keeping up with names of people, which I should be. Names of people, names of movies, names of songs, whatever. I'm not good at it. Got to write everything down. But I know that name. I know that name.
Yeah.
So that shows you how good his promotion and his marketing is.
He might have had people with a lot of money behind him that helped him with it. I don't know how he did so well with, you know. I mean, I do know that some of the guys who got really famous just went out on the street and basically started, like, going into neighborhoods where they wanted to market their stuff and just blaring it over. This is going back when CDs were selling.
CDs
out of the trunk.
Yeah, if that was many years ago. Yeah. So you're talking like probably like the 90s, like Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, like kind of like days?
No, I was like later than that, but it was during, wasn't that long ago, maybe only 5 or 6 years ago, that you could still sell CDs. And I mean, look at Ringo told me that his new record, he had the most sales on vinyl. So vinyl's coming back.
Yes, that I know. Vinyl is very popular now. I actually saw a vinyl record in Walmart for like $25 for a vinyl record. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, it's very popular.
I'm probably going to release when I release the new song after we re-release Down Home Georgia, which is going out now to the world. I'm going to release the new one while that's still getting some play, and probably do a vinyl, like a vinyl 45 that we can sell. So you can buy both songs at the same time.
I love that idea.
Yeah.
I absolutely love that idea. I love vinyl, and I love 45. My dad had 7-8 songs, and that's what
wow.
I had them on, 45s. Yeah.
Wow.
45s.
Yeah. A lot of music.
And I really like that you could hold them. As opposed to just being...
I agree.
Right? Instead of
yeah, I don't like just like plugging a stick in or you know, streaming. It doesn't sound as good and as Virgin Vinyl did. But I also have to agree. I like the whole thing. I mean, like when we would get an album back in the day, a big part of it was the stuff that came with the album. You know, bought the Beatles' White Album, you get 4 8x10s of the Beatles in a big poster, and all the words written on the inside of the cover.
I remember reading those words, and there's a Facebook post that just went up yesterday, I saw. And whoever put the post up, it said how... You know how they're always putting stuff up about, you know, how kids today don't know, you know, this, that, or the other thing.
Yeah, yeah.
And this post said how the kids today do know the words of all of the songs because of sites like lyrics.com, whereas we, like, had to listen to the song and follow along from an album cover or, you know, maybe a flap inside a CD, you know.
Yeah.
But you had to go out and buy it. If you were listening to the radio, or when it used to be listen to the radio, if you were listening to the radio and did not know the words of the song, you were out of luck. You needed to get up and get on your feet and get out of the house and go buy a CD. Go buy the record album, right?
Absolutely,
and that's
but
how,
I think that
that's
was a
how,
good thing.
Do you remember? I remember getting albums or CDs and being so excited to learn what the actual words were. Do you remember that?
I do. You know what? You want to hear a funny one? I had stayed out of music for a long time, as we said at the outset of the show. And I remember I was doing a TV show where we were having all these big celebrities. It was like an Academy Award night event, and all these people were singing this song with me that I wrote with another guy called Let Freedom Ring. And it was when Russia first did away with the USSR. I mean, like... with the communism stuff. Anyway.
Okay.
So we did a show with them. It was one of the first satellite broadcasts where you could broadcast from like 10 different places. And the other song that they wanted to use was Imagine. And I asked Yoko Ono if we could use it. And she said, you know, she gave us the blessing, go ahead and use the song. And so I went to get a bunch of CDs to hand out to all the celebrities. I mean, sorry, a bunch of records. And I went into a record store, the Warehouse, which was a big deal out here in California at the time. And I went in and I couldn't find records. And I was like, where are the records? And the guy said, where have you been, under a rock? There's no such thing anymore. You know? And I had no idea. And it was like CDs. You know, and which brings to mind that scene in what is it, Men in Black, where Tommy Lee Jones they give him this thing with a little tiny disc that was spinning, and he goes, oh, I'm going to have to buy the Beatles' White Album again. You know,
oh my God.
Because they changed format so much, and now there's no format, really. It's just streamed. It's just played.
Yes. Yes.
If you want to download it.
I'm sorry.
You know, people downloaded Down Home Georgia.
Right.
You know, my song was you know, like I said, 4 months in the top 10. It was number one for three weeks in a row on radio. And it made no money because everybody went to YouTube and just took it for free.
Right. And I've heard, because I know from having the dance studio, like they put they did put something on that to where you have to pay now, even though you're not paying a lot of money. But don't you have to pay now to purchase the apps that do that for you?
On YouTube, I don't think so. It's mostly geared for videos, right? It's mostly geared for videos. And I didn't have a video, so the producer just put the song on there with the picture. So, you know, basically people could just take it. They might have had to pay something. I've got, you know, like, I think they just go by the amount of plays that it gets.
And I think I might have skipped a whole step in there.
And there's not much money at all.
Right.
Not much at all. I mean, you know, when thousands of people play it, you get something like $25 or $30. It's ridiculous.
It's also not as exciting, I would think.
No.
You know, this never happened to me. But to be an artist and to sit back and to be thinking about, like, record sales, like actual,
absolutely,
like you said, like vinyls or CDs, like actually, like, being sold, like flip, like in your head, like thinking, like,
right,
oh, my God, like, right, how they're being pressed and like, thrown
yeah
out. Like, that's got to be, like, really
platinum
exciting
records. You know,
exactly,
I had gotten those when
exactly
I was in the band. That you get gold and platinum records that you can hang up on the wall. It's very cool. You know, it's like for a million
exactly
record sales.
Yes. It's not exciting the way it used to be.
No.
Well,
you also don't know, and they can cheat you six ways from Sunday. You know.
We
That's
are getting we're getting signals for shout outs here.
Yeah.
I'm going to go first, and then we are going to have to pick up this discussion another time that Andy and Amanda are unavailable, because this was great. I had an awesome time.
I enjoyed it as well.
I'm going to go first. Okay, shout outs. Amanda Love, Andy Kimball, thank you so much. Lori for listening, Tim for listening, my South Philadelphia Facebook family, Bob Charger, love you so much, thank you for all your help. John D'Antonio for listening, Ron's Auto for listening, Alpha Realty Group, Tony Meckett, and the Heavy Mental Gypsies, that'll be another show altogether. My dad in heaven, love you. And finally, to my love, my heart, my nieces, Dina Marie and Marlena, love you girls. Go out and do good in this world. Back to you, Kevin.
All right, thank you. And I would just say thank you to Andy and Amanda for and Cornell for having us do this. And I only asked one person to listen, which was my one of my young buddies, Evan Estabrook. So a shout out to him and to my grandchildren, River and Connor. And I love you guys. And yeah. So, and you know, I'll shout out to Phil and Florida Becca too, who, without whom I couldn't have made my record and wouldn't have the number one song without them. So that's it for me.
You are awesome. You are just
awesome.
Thank
you, Phil, are you? So are you.
Thank you. I think we might
really
be out.
Enjoyed this.
I'm not sure.
No,
I
think we hear when we get knocked out. But
okay, so I'll do one more.
The English lady comes on and tells us your time.
And kicks us off. My last one, the actors co-op, my acting school, the Seven.
Oh, there you go.
Swarthmore, PA. Pete Postig and Val McAdoo, they are having a premiere July 7th, 7 p.m. at the PAC Center in Swarthmore. Be there.
There you
How's
go.
How's that for an out? How's that for
there
an
you
out?
Go.
Be,
I think that's a good one.
That's
I'm going to also throw one out to Albert and Karen Lee, who Albert played lead guitar on my he's a legendary guitar player who played on my record, and his wife came along when he did it, and we've been great friends ever since, and I will be seeing them on the 3rd at a 4th of July party. So,
fun time.
Shout out
fun
to
time.
Them.
That's
and Robbie
so great.
Krieger from The Doors, who played slide guitar for me.
Who played? Say that again?
I said Robbie Krieger from The Doors, who played slide guitar for me on my records.
You're kidding. You're kidding.
No.
Oh, I know we're 3,000 miles away, but we need to do lunch somehow.
Yeah,
yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, you got too many.
Well, I mean,
cool
there are legends. The thing is, the album's going to be called, when I finish with it, it's going to be called Walking with the Legends, because we have mostly legendary players on it. Yeah.
I love it. You really did walk with legends. You are treasure your stories.
Yeah, some of these people played for Elvis in the Muscle Shoals Rhythm Section. I mean, I'm so blessed to have people like that play with me.
Absolutely blessed. Absolutely.
And here I am.
Thank you God, right? Here we are. And we're out.
Yep.
You know I'm on my way, oh, I'm going down home to Georgia. City life is hard for a guitar-picking man. Yeah, I'll be on my way, oh, I'm going down home to Georgia to drink some moonshine whiskey and to join a country band. Yes, I'll be on my way, oh, I'm going down home to Georgia. Right back in the city's laying heavy on my mind. You know I'm on my way, y'all, I'm going down home to Georgia for some real fine home cooking and some old muscadine wine. Well, I thought in the backwoods is the kind of life for me. Living clean and fine and good in everything you see. Singing songs and carrying on with no complaint at all. Travel through my